It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbrink. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
If you're representing a homeless person and you go home at night and you don't think you've done all that you can do for that person, you should feel a level of discomfort when you have a hot meal, a warm shower, a warm bed to go to. And that has meant over the years for me to work into the middle of the night if it means someone can avoid homelessness or domestic violence or can get the medical treatment that they deserve.
Bill Botts, Executive Director of Rappahannock Legal Services in Fredericksburg for the past 26 years and soon to be retired, reflects upon his career in legal aid, which has been rooted in his underlying faith in the ability of the legal system to protect the poor from injustice. And how you can spring open the debt trap of a payday loan is discussed during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 111, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. The Internet Crime Complaint Center has received many complaints from victims of payday loan telephone collection scams. Callers claim the victim is delinquent on a payday loan and must repay the loan to avoid legal consequences. The callers purport to be representatives of the FBI, Federal Legislative Department, various law firms, or other legitimate-sounding agencies. They claim to be collecting debts for companies such as United Cash Advance, U.S. Cash Advance, U.S. CashNet, and other internet check cashing services. According to complaints, the callers have accurate data about victims, including social security numbers, dates of birth, addresses, employer information, bank account numbers, and the names and telephone numbers of relatives and friends. How the fraudsters obtained the personal information varies, but in some cases, victims have reported they completed online applications for other loans or credit cards before the calls started. The fraudsters relentlessly call the victim's home, cell phone, and place of employment. They refuse to provide any details about the alleged payday loans and become abusive when questioned. The callers have threatened victims with legal actions, arrests, and in some cases, physical violence if they don't pay. In many cases, the callers harass victims' relatives, friends, and employers. Some fraudsters have instructed victims to fax a statement agreeing to pay a certain amount on a specific date via a prepaid Visa card, with a statement further declaring that the victim will never dispute the debt. If you receive these calls, do not follow the caller's instructions. Rather, you should notify your banking institutions, contact the three major credit bureaus and request an alert be put on your file, contact your local law enforcement agencies if you feel you are in immediate danger, and file a complaint at www.ic3.gov. Tips to avoid becoming a victim of this scam include: never give your social security number or personal information of any kind over the telephone or online unless you initiate the contact. Be suspicious of any email with urgent requests for personal financial information. Avoid filling out forms in email messages that request personal information. Ensure that your browser is up to date and security patches have been applied. Check your bank, credit, and debit card statements regularly to make sure there are no unauthorized transactions. And when you contact companies, use numbers provided on the backs of cards or statements. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
It's time for the answers to our weekly quiz called Is That Legal? Last week, we gave you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which was incorrect. Here's last week's question. Which two things are true under the 2009 Payday Loan Act? A. The interest rate is limited to 300% per year. B. The term of the loan must be at least 14 days. Or C. The amount of the loan is limited to $500. The correct answers are B. The term of the loan must be at least 14 days. And C. The amount of the loan is limited to $500. There still is no limit on the interest rate which can be charged on a payday loan in Virginia. Later in the show, we'll give you this week's quiz. Is that legal? For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault.
We're here in the studio, and it's time once again for this week's question and answer session. We have our questioner here. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Andy from Chesterfield, Virginia.
Welcome to the show, Andy. What question do we have this week?
My question deals with the loan, payday loans, and how come they can get away with charging 300% plus interest when in the state of Virginia it's against the law to loan shark?
Well, Andy, that's a great question, and the reason that payday lenders can get away with charging 300 plus percent interest in the state of Virginia when loan sharking is illegal is because the Virginia General Assembly allows it. It wasn't until about maybe 2003 that the Virginia General Assembly even passed a law allowing payday lending in the state. And the reason the General Assembly did that was there were neighboring states where payday lending was allowed, and also there was internet payday lending, and so the General Assembly felt, rightly or wrongly, that because it was there, it would be better to have it licensed and regulated in Virginia than unlicensed and unregulated. So they passed the original payday lending law, and it was so bad, and there were so few restrictions that year after year, the General Assembly was considering reform, which finally became law in 2009, as of July 1, 2009. And it makes payday lending only slightly less bad. It's still the enormously high interest rates that you mentioned, 300 to 360% per year. But what the new law does, it allows borrowers to escape what we call the debt trap, because your typical payday loan borrower is going to borrow not just once, but probably 5 or 10 or 20 times. And we see cases like that all the time. Because if you don't have $500 today, you're not going to have $575 2 weeks from today. And so when that loan becomes due, you've got no choice but to take out another loan. The new law since July 1 tries to break that debt trap, and it does it in a number of different ways. First of all, it requires the payday loan to last twice as long as your pay period. So if you're paid every 2 weeks, the loan has to be a minimum of 4 weeks. If you get Social Security or SSI disability once a month, the loan has to be for a minimum of 2 months. Secondly, 1 day has to pass between the ending of one loan and the beginning of the next loan. And you can only have one loan at a time. And there's a database that tracks all of this. Lastly, if you can't make that payment on the due date, you have a choice of asking for what's called a repayment plan, where they take the amount that is unpaid and you get 60 more days to pay it. And the interest during that 60 days is not at that astronomical rate, but at a much more reasonable, lower rate. Now, with all of these reforms, the number of payday loans in Virginia has declined dramatically. We're about 90% fewer payday loans than there were before these reforms. Nevertheless, these loans are a bad idea. And what we advise people to do in the situation where they have a payday loan is stop payment on the check, make sure all of the other checks written on the account are paid, and then, if you wish, close the account. It's not a crime to do this. Payday lender can't start criminal proceedings for doing this. They can't ask for or collect the bad check penalty, which is 3 times the amount of the check. All they can do is take your contract for the payday loan, sue you in general district court, get a judgment against you, and a judgment against you is going to get interest only at 6% per year, not the 300 to 360% that you mentioned. So that may be more information than you even wanted, but does that explain how all this happened?
Yes, that sounds very good. Thank you very much for your answer, and please stay away from those payday loans. They're devastating.
Okay, thank you so much for being on the show. We're here at the offices of Rappahannock Legal Services in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and we are talking with Bill Botts. He has been the executive director of Rappahannock Legal Services for the past 26 years. He will be leaving that position soon, and we wanted to talk to him about his career in legal aid. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you, Marty.
Tell us, Bill, why did you decide to go into legal aid?
Well, in 1969, I graduated from the University of Virginia with a degree in aerospace engineering. By that time, I decided that's not what I wanted to do, but I didn't know what I did want to do. So I took a year off and went into Vista in Louisiana, and it was the defining year of my life. I developed a close relationship with a Jesuit priest there in Louisiana, and he convinced me that my life's work was in public interest law, particularly in legal aid work. So I went to GW Law School beginning in 1970.
How many clients do you think you've helped over your career at legal aid?
Gosh, I never thought about it in that way. I guess you could say that I handle probably 300 to 400 cases a year, so you do the numbers and you get your answer.
Well, what made you decide to apply to be the executive director at Rappahannock Legal Services all those years ago?
Well, I actually started out in legal aid in Florida, working with migrant farm workers. I was there 73 to 75, and then I was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania from 75 to 78. Came to Virginia in 78, took a year off from the law because we just had adopted our son. And at that time, there was a one-year residency requirement in order to take and pass the bar and be admitted. So in July of 79, I began working for what was then the Fredericksburg Legal Aid Society, and it was a time of expansion. I helped open up the first office in the Northern Neck, was there as first managing attorney in 79 to 80, and in the Culpeper office, I was there 1980 to 1982. Came back here to Fredericksburg in 82 and was senior attorney for 2 years. Charles, or Buddy Bennett, was the director during my first years with the program, and he decided to move back to Roanoke, and the position became open. So I was encouraged to apply and said I would do so, but only on the condition that I could keep my hands in cases and that the program would hire a program administrator for the first time.
And you certainly succeeded in keeping your hand in cases. What changes have you seen in the types of cases at Legal Aid over the past 30, 31 years?
I would have to say, long term, we've seen more and more housing cases, more and more homelessness, more and more recently foreclosures. A lot of that initially was because the government basically backed away from support for subsidized housing over the years. I think that was one of the direct reasons for increased homelessness. More recently, and I say by that maybe in the last 10 years, there's been a demographic explosion of immigrants in our area. So we decided to give up federal funding in 2000 and to become an unrestricted program, meaning that we could do things that we couldn't do with federal money, such as representing undocumented persons.
And you've probably partially or maybe mostly answered the next question I had, which was the changes that you've seen in clients at Legal Aid. Obviously, immigrants is a big change. Are there any other changes in the client population that come to mind?
Well, I think that's the biggest change. I think there is more and more homelessness. There's no doubt about that. Homeless shelters in this area didn't exist 30 years ago. In the late 70s and early 80s, there was more and more subsidized housing being developed. And there hasn't been much in the way of subsidized housing at all in the last 20 years. And that's coincided with the increase in homelessness.
Now, you've been here, of course, 31 years, and you saw Legal Aid basically arrive in Fredericksburg. Have you seen any change in how other attorneys deal with Legal Aid attorneys?
Well, I think that after 31 years, we're a local institution. I think that with that comes certain respect, a certain amount of clout. But also, I think it's incumbent upon us to continue to advocate for the have-nots and to be aware of the fact that we need to use our respect in a zealous way to continue zealous advocacy and not to get too comfortable with the people whose respect we have gained over the years.
And what about judges? Have you seen changes in how judges feel about Legal Aid?
I would have to say yes. I think that they're more receptive. They realize that Legal Aid is here to stay. It is an institution, and that referrals on a regular, ongoing basis to us are appropriate, and they welcome our presence in cases that would otherwise be more difficult to litigate.
Do you have a philosophy of litigation? And if so, what is it?
Well, I'm a big believer in resolving things outside the courtroom if they can be resolved, because I think if adverse parties can buy into a resolution, then I think that promotes something that might not otherwise be achieved through litigation where the adverse party comes away feeling wronged or harmed. I always try to fashion a resolution first. That's not to say that you have to be wimpy or give in, but what you're really trying to do is to persuade the other side, both inside the litigation and outside the litigation, on an ongoing basis, because they're as much a part of the community as you are, a local landlord or a business, and you want them to know you're there and that you're going to be there, but there has to be some accommodation, some fairness, some balance in dealings between people.
Now, at Legal Aid, you have seen many people in very desperate circumstances. How have you handled that?
My feeling about that is to feel like or believe that you're walking in their shoes. If you're representing a homeless person and you go home at night and you don't think you've done all that you can do for that person, you should feel a level of discomfort when you have a hot meal, a warm shower, a warm bed to go to. And that has meant over the years for me to work into the middle of the night if it means someone can avoid homelessness or domestic violence, or can get the medical treatment that they deserve. The expression is there, but for the grace of God go I. And having grown up in a blue-collar family where I saw people struggling, and having been in Vista for a year in 69 and 70, and living in a shack for a year on the black side of town, segregated, without indoor plumbing, I feel that I have a certain level of empathy that maybe many people don't have.
What have been some of the most memorable cases that you've worked on at Legal Aid?
I'll mention two, one of which was in Florida, where I started out in 73 to 75. The OSHA, federal OSHA regulations, workplace safety, were brand new during that time period. And at that point in Belgrade, Florida, where our office was located, there were 10,000 British West Indian, mostly Jamaican, cane cutters who came in each year under work visas, each season. And they were transported from the barracks to the fields, to the cane fields, in these tractor-trailer trucks where they were packed like cattle and they had unsheathed cane knives. One morning, the truck went to turn across a narrow bridge over a canal and fell over into the canal. and all the workers were lacerated. There were, many of them went to the hospital. We filed a OSHA complaint, and as a result, within a few weeks, all the trucks were eliminated, and there were hundreds of school buses that had been shipped in from Detroit transporting the workers.
Wow, that's quite a story. What about the Rappahannock Legal Services case?
The Rappahannock Legal Services case started with a phone call to my house at 4 in the morning. A client of mine was calling from a local hospital saying that she was in labor and they would not treat her because she had not had prenatal services through a local OBGYN and had gone to the health department instead. From that client, we represented a total of 18 women. The state and federal agencies got involved, and this was about the same time as a COBRA legislation, federal patient anti-dumping legislation, was becoming effective. And this was the first case in the country to result in a $500,000 fine against the hospital, all of which was turned back to the hospital so they would hire some OBGYNs on staff to deliver indigent pregnant women rather than send them to Richmond.
What a case. That's terrific. Would you encourage a law student to go into legal aid today? And if so, why?
Yes. I think there's a sense of idealism. There's a sense of people who are so desperate that they have nowhere else to turn. And legal aid is the end of the line for them, and it's make or break. It may be a little case in terms of a little person, a little problem, but for them, it's the biggest problem in the world. And if you want to see law practice where you're close to your clients, you're close to humanity, and if you're interested in that, that's what I would recommend.
And finally, how would you summarize your career?
I've been blessed. I've been really blessed. Booker T. Washington once said that the secret of happiness is helping others, and that's what legal aid work is all about. There's no one else there to help folk that we represent, and we're there. We do what we can for them, and oftentimes it's the difference between being homeless or not homeless or being battered or not battered.
And on that wonderful note, we will end. We have been speaking with Bill Botts. He is the retiring executive director of Rappahannock Legal Services in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Thank you so much for being on the show, Bill.
Thank you, Marty.
It's time for our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? We give you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which is incorrect, and we give the correct answers next week. If you're the first to email the two correct answers, we'll post your name on our show's website and send you a free copy of the Virginia State Bar's Handbook on Your Legal Rights and Responsibilities. Here's this week's question. Which two things are true about payment of wages in Virginia? A, hourly employees must be paid at least once every 2 weeks or twice a month. B, salaried employees must be paid at least once a month. Or C, an employer may not withhold any wages except for taxes and amounts you owe the employer. If you know the two correct answers, email them by Friday to marty@cvlas.org and be next week's winner. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, Every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Most custody, support, and visitation cases are handled in the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court, and most people don't have an attorney. Tune in next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, private attorney Sandra Bowen, tells you how to prepare your own case to present to a judge in the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on September 2, 2009. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.